Chapter 18.
What's a Hutun? A coward. Physical coward. Moral coward. Any kind of scum without the spine to stand their ground or do the right thing. We don't have a word for hero. Being prepared to die for your family and friends or what you hold dear is a basic requirement for a Mondo. So it's not worth a separate word. It's only cowards we had to find a special name for.
Baltan Kerid, explaining the finer points of Mondoa and Mandalorian culture to Jaina Solo over a Bushegal, a large ale. Docking tube, med sprinter, clinging to the hull of Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin.
I can't leave Tahiri, but I might not get out of here alive either.
Kytus was staring into the Mandalorian's face now, or at least his helmet. There were no eyes to fix on, just a T-shaped nothing set in a pocked and scarred violet metal visor. It seemed to go on for minutes, but it could only have been seconds. The man had a tight grip on his ankle. The muzzle of his blaster was in Kytus's belly. And then the man didn't fire. Kytus didn't even need a second. A fraction's hesitation was all he needed to get free. It was a trick that had bought him time with Mara. Not a full illusion, but enough to check someone at the reflex level. The face of a loved one, even though they knew the identity of the enemy they were facing. He had no idea what might stop a Mandalorian. He opted for Aelin Vell's face.
"Doesn't suit you, Dar-Jaiti," said the Mandalorian wearily, and then simply held his blaster to Kytus's kneecap as Tahiri clung to him in the tangle of limbs and weapons.
"Ah, Fett, you spoilsport. I have to have some fun."
He fired into Kytus's leg. Then he just let go. The agony was suddenly somewhere else. It wasn't happening to Kytus at that moment, but to another Kytus a long way away. He put his last, best effort into force-punching the hatch overhead, not pushing, nothing so refined, and bursting it open. At the moment he did that, he pushed off hard with his uninjured leg and rocketed through the docking ring into the sprinter with Tahiri clutched to him. The next thing he knew, he was on the med sprinter's deck, Tahiri sprawled beside him. He slammed the inner hatch controls, and the hull sealed. He needed to get clear. Whatever had smashed into him outside was going to pursue him. But Tahiri needed help now. He concentrated everything on holding that blood back, every force trick he could muster, and scrambled for clamps and dressings and fluid lines. She was unconscious. He expected to feel a barrage of cannon fire just before his ship broke up, and he had a few final seconds of feeling that he'd fought in vain. But he was still in one piece, and nothing was hammering on the hull. He couldn't understand why he had several clear minutes. He was certain it really was that long, not the effect of adrenaline and panic on his brain's time perception. And nothing had happened to him while he put a line into Tahiri's arm and pumped plasma into her as he put a proper compression dressing on her thigh. He'd managed to get the suit stuck in the dressing, too, but she wasn't bleeding out now. And he was still alive. It really was his destiny. Nobody could be that lucky without a reason. Kytus hit the automated controls as he stumbled past the pilot's console and sent the medspeeder shooting vertically away from Bloodfin's hull.
"It's okay, Tahiri," he said, centering himself again. "We're both going to live to fight another day. It's our destiny."
Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin.
"Leave him," Fett said. Orade, back off. I said he was Jaina's, and I mean it.
Orade's voice came out of nowhere. Jaina realized she could hear the comlink from Myrta's helmet as it lay on one side on the deck.
Yes, Mandalore. You can't blame a boy for trying, though.
Let me go after Jason, Jaina said. He's hurt, he's tired, he's got an injured apprentice.
In what? Fett said. The Besulik? Great. And then what do you do when you catch him? You're not ready to do what needs doing. We'll make you ready.
Fett had hold of Myrta's shoulder as if he was going to shake the daylights out of her. Instead, he just reached out to touch her hair, a couple of awkward smoothing gestures that suggested she was burning his fingers. It struck Jaina that he might never have stroked his own daughter's hair. It was disturbingly poignant. True to type, Myrta bristled, and Fett shoved his thumb in his belt. The brief attempt at being grandfather and granddaughter had evaporated.
"I'm fine, Babuir," Myrta said. "Me and Jaina, we're a good double act."
"You're a maniac," Jaina said. "Tahiri could have killed you.
She had to get past the Beskar first. And anyway, you got her."
"No, you got her. You severed an artery."
"Well, that's for killing an old man."
Jaina tried to imagine how Myrta felt, being so close to the person who'd killed her mother, and not being able to get at him. Jaina was now in a world of unsettling emotions post-combat, of feeling the rush dissipate, and thinking of who might have been killed and who might have done the killing, and an odd urge to find everything both funny and terrifying at the same time. Fett cut in.
"Let's get back below. In case it slipped your minds, we've still got a few troopers to calm down."
He cocked his head suddenly, as if he was listening to comm chatter.
"Okay. Tal Gal says she's done that. It would be nice if someone told me when they were storming a hangar deck."
The hatch overhead opened, and Carid dropped down with Vevut, the pair of them hitting the deck with loud thuds. Carid lifted off his helmet and shook his head like an animal shaking water out of its coat.
"I enjoyed that," he said, all smiles. "No offense, JT, but kneecapping your brother made my day. It surely did. If the Mandalore hadn't been such a spoilsport and made me stop, I'd have enjoyed putting that bolt in his..."
Vevut slapped Myrta's back enthusiastically.
"Kondosi, now that's a daughter to have in the family. Does Orade know you can stab like that?"
Myrta grinned at him and shoved him in the shoulder, all rough Mandalorian affection.
"I can cook, I can dig trenches, I can stab a chakar."
And she laughed. It was quite transformational. She was a different woman. She seemed far more at ease with her father-in-law than she ever did with her grandfather, and Jaina wondered if seeing that hurt Fett. Fett just shook his head and walked off down the passage, stooping slightly because there was so little headroom. Jaina and the others trooped after him. Somehow it felt much harder to climb back down those shafts now the adrenaline had ebbed. They picked their way out of the citadel and into the ship itself, suddenly finding crew everywhere, and shock troopers in white, some, not all, being herded at blaster point along the main passage. Others, helmets under their arms, were talking to crewmates as if nothing had happened. Clearly, not all of them felt obliged to die in a ditch for the Moffs. They might well have been more sympathetic to Pelion, after all.
"What a mess,"
Fett said, head turning in a slow scan as he seemed to take in Bloodfin's sorry condition. The ship was a mass of scorched paint and buckled hatches. It looked like every vertical surface had been damaged somehow.
Brand new ship. Disgraceful.
Could have been much worse, Carid said defensively. We were pretty careful under the circumstances. If Dalla starts bleating about the paintwork, she can shove it.
I think she's got other issues, Fett said. I'm going to find Pelion's body. We're not savages, after all.
Jaina trailed after him at a discreet distance, knowing he could see her in his helmet's 360-degree vision, but not wanting to crowd him. She let him enter Pelion's day cabin and stood back to wait, but then she heard him talking to someone. The lighting was returning to normal all around the ship. Machinery whined and hummed as systems came back online.
It's a dirty deal, Rige.
Is Dalla coming?
Yeah. I'll leave you two to sort this.
Rige's voice sounded shaky.
Well, this crew will serve her, out of respect for the Admiral. We'll settle the score for him.
Jaina edged forward. Fett was talking to a man in his 30s in naval uniform, a lieutenant commander, and there was a body under a blanket laid on the couch. Jaina noted the immaculate boots protruding. Poor old Pelion. This was hardly the first person she'd known well, lost touch with, and then next seen as a casualty of war, but it seemed a terrible thing to reach such an age and then be killed, alone and betrayed. Rige nodded politely to her. Fett came out of the cabin and walked slowly away. Jaina caught up with him.
After all those years, she said. What a terrible thing.
It's war, Fett said.
I meant that if you reach your 90s, you should have a reasonable expectation of dying peacefully at home.
Fett sounded as if he'd snorted.
Not Pelion. He died well. Men like that don't want to fade out quietly.
Jaina wondered if Fett had that kind of end in mind. She couldn't imagine him sitting on a porch in Caldabe in his dotage.
Myrta's handy in a fight, Jaina said. Why am I trying to be sociable? I hope you're proud of her.
Fett shrugged, still walking.
She's a fighter. I know.
I learned a lot today. I even found myself doing a bevine. You know, red mist, crazy, swinging away like a maniac.
He'll be delighted.
Doesn't it bother you that you've let me learn so much? She asked. I know a lot about how Mandalorians fight now.
So what have you really learned, Solo?
Fett recoiled his fiber cord line. It vanished into a housing on his armor, and it didn't seem possible that so much cord could fit in there. It reminded her of a conjuring trick.
Our weapons? Everything from a besulik to our bare hands. Our technology? We're still using tech 4,000 years old. Our secret headquarters? We're everywhere. Our numbers? We don't even know. How to assassinate our leaders? We don't need any. If I got shot tomorrow, they'd all regroup and carry on without me. The only secret we have is how our metalworkers forge Beskar, and we're not even reliant on that.
Jaina shrugged.
When you put it like that, it's zero.
Everyone can see how we win, but it's another thing to do it.
I was saying thank you, actually.
You're welcome, Solo. By the way, did you know your brother can change his appearance in a fight to look like someone else?
No,
Jaina said. Jason liked his illusions, though. It didn't surprise her.
I'll keep that in mind. Thanks again, Fett.
If he walked much farther, he'd end up treading vacuum.
He was trying to make some space to think in. She could tell that.
And he left Jason for me.
Jaina pondered that for the rest of the day. Aft Engineering Flat, former Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin. Dala walked along the row of bodies, looking as if she were carrying out a parade inspection on troops who just happened to be lying flat on their backs. She paused a couple of times to put her weight on one polished boot, the other leg extended gracefully for balance, and leaned over slightly to frown at a name on a badge. Keel's coup days were over. One moth earned a closer inspection and an exploratory prod with her boot.
"That's one of the misogynist parasites I wanted to kill personally for Legius," she said. "Fett, I'm disappointed."
"Shob, we always forget to check ID when folks open fire on us."
Carid lifted his helmet and wiped his forehead with the palm of his glove.
"We'll fix our quality control process, ma'am. I can stand him up again, and then you can put a round in him if you like."
Dala said nothing and didn't take her eyes off the moths, but stepped back and patted Carid's helmet with unerring accuracy as he held it in one hand. Fett understood her, even if the comment was veneered in a joke.
10% discount for killing the right barv too fast at the wrong time."
"You're a gentleman, Fett. Come on, we'll leave the sanitation crew to their task. Let's keep this ship immaculate for poor Gil."
So Bloodfin was her ship now, another toy taken from the squabbling boys who wouldn't let her play the last time. She walked along the passageway with the confidence of ownership, but she didn't go into the day cabin where Pelion had been murdered. Instead, she carried on through the ship and down a couple of decks to the wardroom, where small clusters of gray-uniformed officers were sitting around small tables talking in low voices. They looked like men, they were all human males, which no doubt made Dala bristle, who'd suddenly realized what it meant to be exiled a long way from home. They jumped to attention when they spotted Dala. She pressed all their Admiral on-deck buttons without even trying.
"As you were, gentlemen."
She gave them a little nod and a hand gesture that said not to bother with protocol right then, and settled herself in one of the more luxuriously upholstered seats in a private corner. There were blaster burns everywhere.
"So that's the new Sith approach, is it, Fett? Shooting a man Gil's age, after all the years of service he's given the galaxy? Do you think the Jedi can get rid of them this time?"
Fett thought of Jaina Solo, stuck with the dilemma that removing Sith the permanent way meant becoming like them, at least for a short while. Expedience messed up those high-flown morals.
"If they do, they'll only come back again. Swing of the pendulum."
"As long as you've got Jedi, you'll get Sith," said Dala. "One begets the other."
Fett tried to recall his history lessons, the sort that Mandalorians knew, even if nobody else did.
"Yeah. Gets tiresome."
"Come on, Fett. You did all right out of Vader."
"Sith paid Mandalorians for millennia. We had a war with them, too. And guess who didn't win? It's a cycle of sectarian brawls. Everyone else gets hit by the flying bottles. I've done my bit to remove the problem, but they just keep coming back."
"Folks say the same about Mondos."
Dala examined her nails, deep in thought. A steward darted out from behind the counter with drinks on a tray.
a real human steward, and a real ionite tray, because the Imperials were particular about that kind of thing. Dalla nursed the glass for a while, but didn't drink. Fett didn't touch his at all.
"I think there can be a third way," she said. "No Jedi Council. Keep them in their box, away from politics, and certainly never arm them."
"Ordinary barbs running their own affairs? You crazy woman, Dalla. It'll never catch on."
She fondled the glass again, and didn't put it down this time.
"You have a better idea?"
"No, but arrogant stupidity doesn't always come bundled with midichlorians. It's everywhere."
"So who succeeds Jason Solo when someone finally drops him down a reactor shaft come the glorious day? Because it won't be that poisonous little Vongbait Tahiri over my dead body. And hers, of course."
Fett didn't like many beings in the galaxy. He was indifferent to 99%, and most of the remainder were on his target list. But he could manage a scrap of approval for Dalla. She talked his language.
"You sound like a woman who cares what happens in the core," he said.
"If I did, you're the resident Jedi countermeasures expert. Would you be too retired to do some consultancy work for me?"
Fett indicated his forearm plate, a weapons platform in its own right. The flamethrower needed servicing, he noted.
"Consult this. I'm always negotiable."
"Seriously?"
"If you're ever in the position where you need a place to lock up your Jedi, we can do you a good price on Beskar restraints, and we'll always have the troops to make use of them."
"Let's keep that in mind."
Dalla raised her glass, and Fett thought she was going to make some informal deal, but she indulged in a little sparing sentimentality, and he approved of that, too.
"To Gil Pelion, the last of the Empire's true gentlemen. Safe harbor, my friend."
Fett just inclined his head. The galaxy liked its heroes better dead, when they didn't hang around doing inconvenient things like shaming everyone else and setting glittering examples.
"Or being fallibly mortal."
The worst thought he'd ever had in his life was that if his father had survived, he might not have lived up to the dead paragon that still shaped his every waking moment. It was one of the few missing pieces he didn't want to track down, and he still hadn't found time to shoot the barv who'd planted and watered the doubt in his head.
"So what if Jango Fett wasn't the holy Fen Shisa? He was my dad. He loved me, and I loved him. That's enough of a hero for me."
"I forgot how effective your iron can be against Force users," Dalla said, dragging him out of his thoughts. "You'd be amazed what ended up at the Maw installation when the Emperor's closets got cleared out."
Dalla never disappointed. She was solid granite, always on the ball, always looking for the angle, even when she could have relaxed her guard. Fett liked being kept sharp.
"I always wondered what the Empire did with the Beskar ore they strip-mined out of Mandalore."
"Found they couldn't make it work the way your people could. That's what they did."
Fett enjoyed the idea of all that Beskar needing Mandalorian expertise.
"Yeah, you need to ask a Mondo metalworker, and ask him nicely."
I'm glad we understand each other, Fett.
Crystal clear, Dalla.
Mind if I visit your fine but challengingly rustic world?
Come and have an ale at Myrta's wedding.
I've got a son and a granddaughter. Where did the years go?
Fett almost asked where she'd found time to have a family, but the way years just collapsed on themselves, and how you woke up one morning to find you were suddenly 50 years older than the last time you checked, reminded him of the looming task of coming clean with Sintas.
"Better go find my tame Jedi,"
he said, sliding his untouched glass toward her.
"Before you give me back our iron to make a box to put her in."
Jaina was pacing the silent hangar, completely in a world of her own, swinging her lightsaber, deactivated, in some drill or other. He wasn't sure if it was unalloyed good news to see her getting on with Myrta or not, but it beat having Myrta rip herself apart dealing with the sister of the man who had killed her mother. Jaina stopped and looked up at Fett on the gantry.
"Come on,"
he said, and trotted down the durasteel mesh ladder.
"Time for bounty hunting class."
"Aren't you whacked after today?"
she asked.
"No."
Fett checked his fiber cord line, coiled, ready to fire and trap, and flexed his fingers.
"If I don't hand you back to the space bum smarter than I found you, he'll just brag about being my nemesis for another 40 years, and then I'll have to shoot him to shut him up."
"Just remember to shoot first."
And she almost grinned. Almost. Jaina Solo was okay, he thought, and she couldn't help being a Jedi. Fett thought of a Jedi agent called Kubariat and wondered if he had a granddaughter out there somewhere.
"Okay,"
he said, waiting for her lunge.
"Come and get me, Jedi."
Office of the Chief of State, Coruscant, 4 days later. Routine, salaries paid on time, nightly holodramas, predictable prices, was the anesthetic that had kept Coruscant docile in Kytus's brief absence. He inhaled the familiar scent of carpet, warm datapad plastoid and fresh-brewed calf, as his office doors sighed apart and he limped to his desk.
"I could have shot her, of course."
If the debacle of the Fondor operation had been the Force's patient way of removing Neothel neatly, making her a traitor and Kytus a wounded hero defeated by treachery, then he was prepared to concede it was another necessary source of pain. He took off his gloves and laid them on the desk. Shoot her, and people would have called him a despot. Lose ships and personnel, both the destroyed and the stolen, and Kytus could return with some honor, with the same end result. It was all illusion. If Luke Skywalker thought his Falanasi conjuring was fine sleight of hand, he didn't understand the power of presentation. The new admin droid glided in.
"I've prepared a digest of the non-urgent matters that arose during your absence, Chief of State,"
it said, placing a neat stack of datapads on the fine desk that used to belong to Cal Omis.
"I've taken the liberty of clearing Admiral Neothel's office and transferring all defense business to this department. Two matters for your diary today. The appointment of a new Supreme Commander, and Senator Gasil would like to see you."
"Oh, I'd forgotten him,"
said Kytus. The senators who were left after so many defections and secessions from the GA seemed to huddle together for comfort, forming protective herds in committees. They talked. Droids listened patiently, interpreted creatively, and then just did what Kytus told them to. It was a therapeutic arrangement. Many government departments were now overseen by droids. Kytus liked their efficiency and an absence of ambitious self-interest.
Does the Security Council still sit?
I believe so, Chief of State. Quarterly. Hence the Senator's wish to see you.
Very well.
He's waiting for me to summon him.
Now would be ideal, then. Get it all out of the way. I've got a tight schedule this week.
I've thinned out the diary a little, sir, said the droid. I anticipated that you might be tired after the events of last week.
Excellent.
That really was most impressive.
I appreciate your foresight.
How is Lieutenant Vela?
Recovering well, thank you.
Kaidus found a cup of calf poured for him, piping hot, and settled at the desk to skim the data pads. The galaxy was calming down. He could feel it. The vista from the window caught his eye and distracted him for a moment. The transparasteel wall of his office was full of Coruscant as it always should have been, canyon towers and orderly skylanes full of patient traffic, jobs, peace, ample food. The vague echoes of the Yuuzhan Vong occupation, visible in some of the alien vegetation, and the more recently constructed buildings that had filled yawning gaps left by destruction, seemed to haunt the citizens no more now than the Lahag early occupation of Harbinande, which left the Har worlds full of exquisite architecture that attracted tourists, with no real memory of the suffering and misery inflicted centuries before. There was a point where the past stopped nagging to have a voice in every daily decision and simply became history. The droid had collated media coverage of the past week, too. Kaidus shuffled through the pads to choose one digest to play on the larger desk screen. He skipped through the battle footage and the studio analysis of who failed and why. Irrelevant. All history already, and his eye was caught by a headline from one of the scurrilous gossip holozines, not one focused on the sleazy private lives of emotodrama and Hollywood stars, but one of the more pretentiously political versions that mixed satire, really very funny, he had to admit, with real news, savagely written. Jason's Game of Happy Families, Joint Gangster of State. Kaidus was used to the steady stream of attacks about the removal of Cal Omis and indefinite emergency powers, but it was all talk in the fringe media. Citizens did nothing about it and got on happily with their lives. This story opened with the coup and went on to list actions against members of his own family. The attempt to court-martial Jaina, the arrest warrant on his parents, and the rift with Luke and the whole Jedi Council. Then there was a reference to the death of Luke Skywalker's wife on Cavan at a time when Jason Solo was away from Coruscant, juxtaposed with the death of Aelin Vel, dubbed Fett Jr., Cal Omis, Durr Gedjon, and a much more direct line about his involvement in an alleged fatal assault on Lieutenant Tebbutt not being investigated by the fleet or CSF. Kaidus laid his cup down on the desk and read the summary again. He found he was actually upset by it. No, offended. Hurt. None of it was actually untrue. He explored his feelings, surprised that he could be stung by such a minor episode in a turbulent, painful life. Just chatter from beings who didn't count and who couldn't affect his destiny.
But that's not how it happened. It wasn't like that.
The report made him look like a common gangster, a thug who had seized power and then went about removing anyone who offended him or stood in his way, like some Hutt crime lord. Kaidus wanted to calm the holozine and tell them they'd got it wrong. He was serving the common good. Gangsters were driven by wealth, by lust, or by some sick desire to see people cower. He wasn't a criminal. He didn't deal in drugs or rob anyone. He'd done what he had to do, because nobody else was willing to tackle the anarchy or stand up to the old power elites.
Did they think he could change the galaxy by asking people nicely to stop being monsters to each other? All those things had to be done.
Mara, Lieutenant Tebbutt, I didn't kill them for personal reasons. They were part of the path I had to take to be worthy of this office. How can you understand what a Sith has to do? How can you apply laws to us? Your ordinary laws weren't meant for us.
Who would make the tough choices if they were hidebound by conventional law? Had anyone protested about Luke Skywalker bringing down Palpatine? The rebellion broke every law in the book and killed many people, but citizens were ready to accept that because change was needed. Kydus was only doing the same thing, and yet he was vilified for it. He was wounded by the blindness around him. Why could they not understand? He wasn't explaining it clearly enough, perhaps. He slammed his cup down on the desk and calmed the droid.
Tell Senator Gasil I can't see him today. Tell him we'll reschedule.
The droid's voice was even and patient, not a hint of disapproval in it.
Sir, he says the Security Council must meet within the next week, because it's a legal requirement that they convene a minimum of once every 3 months, and he must have your input.
Kydus could feel his perspective changing, as if the office was a hollow image being adjusted to monochrome and its depth of field distorted. His desk appeared to recede into the distance, bleeding color.
Well, if that's all he's worried about, just get the law changed.
Sir?
I set that up months ago. The amendment to the Emergency Measures Act.
Had everyone forgotten how he'd stripped away all this bureaucracy? Memories were short, it seemed.
The clause I used to change the law and arrest Cal Omis. I can change any law I need to, without taking it to the Senate. Just use my administrative powers. Change it. Go on. Remove the whole section about any requirement to hold meetings. Simple.
Yes, sir, said the droid.
Like HM3, the excellent legal droid who had spotted the loophole for Kydus, he didn't fuss over right and wrong, only what was definably legal. And Kydus decided the law. It was a legitimate government responsibility. And he was the government.
Oh, and get Captain Shevu in here, please.
While Kydus waited for Shevu to arrive, he took deep, calming breaths, seeing the color return to the room and its proportions revert to normal.
I don't meditate much these days, do I?
Action had to be his meditation. He had so much to do. Tahiri would have to shoulder more of the burden. She was a Sith apprentice now, and that meant work. Kydus had been planning to summon the editor of the Holozine to his office and demand a full retraction and a new article explaining the truth of his actions. But the longer he waited, the less pressing it seemed. Did anyone who mattered read the Holozine? Had it started riots? No. All that really mattered was that the few key people around him understood his burden. Shevu, for example. Kydus changed his mind. He wouldn't ask Shevu to send a GAG squad out to arrest the editor, and so guarantee that the hack would listen to Kydus carefully. It was a tawdry errand for a man who'd done a fine job of keeping Coruscant safe during the last year. A pot of calf, then, and time to catch up on policy. Kydus had missed having Shevu at his right hand during the battle. Valuing loyalty was something his grandfather had understood well, but Kydus was also aware that subservience wasn't necessary. A little honest contention
was far more important. The doors opened. Shevu, looking carefully unemotional as always, walked in and stood in front of the desk. "Welcome back, sir." His quiet dislike was tangible. "Eventful few days." Kaidus gestured to the chair.
"Are you surprised about Neothel?"
Shevu sat down.
"Not really, sir. Just the timing."
"Better that than trying to oust me while I was off-planet."
"Yes, I can imagine that would have been messy, sir."
He was telling the absolute truth as he saw it. Kaidus could feel the solid certainty in him.
"Look,"
Kaidus said, offering him the holozine. Just thinking about the report triggered his anger again.
"Look at this ungrateful nonsense."
Shevu looked at it quickly, in a way that said he either didn't want to read it or had already done so, in detail. But he was a former CSF officer. He'd have read it.
"Do you want me to take action, sir?"
"If you'd asked me half an hour ago, I'd have said yes."
"So you'd prefer to forget it? The allegations are pretty strong. But then it's a satirical holozine, known for that kind of lurid story."
"Oh, I'm not disputing the facts, Captain."
"Really?"
Shevu flared a little in the force, a white-hot burst of surprise. Kaidus realized few of the man's superiors could ever have been totally honest with him.
"They would have to prove the accusations if you pressed the issue."
"It's just that they don't seem to understand why I took certain actions. They make me sound like a criminal."
Kaidus clenched his fist in his lap and let out a breath before feeling in control again, back in his own skin and not watching himself from the outside.
"They're only saying what I hear crew whispering in the mess, saying that I've killed a lot of people, and that I wasn't on duty when Mara Skywalker was killed, and that they wouldn't put it past me to assassinate even my own aunt, like one of those lunatic inbred Irmenu emperors. That's what they say, isn't it?"
Shevu was never one to show apprehension. He sat with his hands clasped in his lap and met Kaidus's gaze straight on.
"Does that worry you, sir?"
"Do you think it should?"
"Well, they seem to have sources within the fleet and other departments."
"I despise disloyalty, too. But is it worth chasing gossiping clerks when we have admirals handing battle plans to the Jedi Council?"
"Depends on the effect on morale, sir."
"You sound just like Neothel."
"Command is all about harnessing the troops' willingness to suspend sensible self-interest and put their lives on the line when everyone else is running the other way. That's morale. You're better placed than anyone to feel what your troops really think of you."
A lesser man would have agreed frantically with a capricious supervisor, afraid of saying the wrong thing. But Shevu wasn't intimidated. Kaidus still sensed wariness, but also a powerful sense of certainty like a permacrete slab. This was a man who knew his own mind and wasn't afraid to stand up and be counted. And as he hadn't fled like Neothel, that meant he was here because he wanted to be on Kaidus's team. He understood justice, too.
"Do you want to know how it happened?"
Kaidus asked. Shevu pursed his lips as if embarrassed.
"Do you think I need to know? After all, I was involved with Gedgen. It's not like I'm going to be shocked by this."
"I'm not a lunatic or a common criminal. I didn't kill Mara in cold blood. And I care what you think of me, because I see all reasonable good beings when I look at you. You're my gauge of how ordinary people see me. I'd like you to know,
Kaidas said. Shevu might not have understood the complexities of Sith prophecy. If he did, Kaidas suspected he was too rooted in the physical world to give it any credence, but he would see why Kaidas had no choice.
If I'm not burdening you.
No, sir.
I knew that Mara or Luke would come after me sooner or later, for taking their precious son as my apprentice.
Kaidas knew Shevu liked Ben. There was no point explaining why Kaidas had once thought he might be forced to kill him.
Do you know what I mean by apprentice? I'm a Sith Lord.
Oh, it felt good and clean to be able to say that openly. Shevu didn't recoil.
Do you know what a Sith is? We're Force users.
Is it like the old-fashioned wing of Jedi philosophy, sir?
That's an excellent description. Yes, we're more inclined to bring law and order than the Jedi Council.
Shevu's expression said it was an academic point. So did she come after you, sir?
She vowed to kill me in front of witnesses in the Senate lobby.
Oh.
2 Bith senators, Haas and Fola. And she was as good as her word. I was leaving the Hapes Cluster when she ambushed me in her StealthX, and we ended up on Cavan, where she pursued me into the abandoned tunnels and tried to kill me. We brawled, actually brawled. She brought down the ceiling, and she was like a madwoman, complete blind rage. I had lightsaber, blaster, and crush injuries, and the only way I could stop her was to use the poison darts I keep as a last line of defense.
Kaidas had omitted some detail about Lumia, because it wasn't relevant, but the rest was completely true. Mara had ambushed him, had tracked him into the tunnels, had tried to kill him. Not arrest or detain him, but kill him. Shevu looked shaken.
Well, at least I know why Ben changed his mind about serving in the guard now.
Everything Mara had done was about Ben. Kaidas had such high hopes for the boy. But Lumia had been right, after all. Ben didn't have the stomach for the fight. He didn't have what it took to be a Sith. Kaidas wished he could talk to Lumia now that he knew so much more. And that meant that he missed her. He never thought he would. But she'd diverted Luke Skywalker's focus from him, however temporary that might eventually prove to be, and paid for that with her life. It was a heartbreakingly noble act. He had to live up to that sacrifice.
I miss her, and I miss Alana, but I have to forget her. It really wasn't personal revenge, Captain,
Kaidas said, concentrating again.
That's for small people. It was part of my path to Sith ascendancy.
That must be very distressing, sir, Shevu said.
Kaidas felt some deep, raw emotion in him that he couldn't quite place, but it was pity, in a way.
Being one of your family.
Yes. I'm putting it out of my mind as best I can, because we were very close once.
Shevu adjusted his jacket in that awkward way of someone who wanted to end a painful conversation.
Try a police tip, sir. When we're faced with something horrible, something disgusting, a terrible crime, we try to forget what we feel about the perpetrator in case the anger distracts us and makes us careless. You know, cutting corners to get the guy. Maybe losing the case in court because of that. So we focus on the victim. We find the pity. Pity keeps us going. We want to give the victims and their family justice. Closure. Think about that sometime, sir.
That's very helpful, actually, Captain.
Kytus hadn't thought much about how non-force users might use techniques just as Sith did to channel their emotions productively. Given that Shevu didn't like him, the advice was touching. A recognition that they both had dirty jobs to do. A mutual respect.
By the way, I have a title now. Darth Kytus. Would you mind using it in future?
Shevu's expression was now unreadable. Yes, sir. He seemed to be trying out the name under his breath. Do I still call you sir? Jason knew it was a lot to take in at one sitting. Shevu had absorbed it quite well, all things considered.
Technically, it's my lord,
Jason said.
But sir is fine on duty.
He glanced at the chrono on the wall, feeling a lot more positive than he had for days. The debacle at Fondor was a temporary setback, rapidly receding into the past. He had the Imperial remnant at his side now, a shadow of its former glory, but still a massively powerful force to be reckoned with. And Shevu understood him and his motives. Kytus smiled at him as he got up to leave.
You know, Captain, I feel the hand of history on my shoulder. I really do.